And so they break these things to get the gold from the wood that was overlaid. They break these things to even get the brass. They break them to rip the metals away from that which was not as costly. The Bible says they break it and they carried all the brass in verse 17 of them to Babylon. This is a direct fulfillment of what God told Hezekiah would happen when he showed them all of the goods that were in his possession at the time. You remember when the sundial went back 15 degrees because he got 15 years of extension on his life. And when the Babylonians came and said, "Congratulations, we heard you recovered from your deadly illness. Tell us about it. We saw the stars," or whatever. And he says, "It's great." And he started showing them everything in his house. And you remember Isaiah came in and he said, "Why is it? What did you show him?" He said, "I showed him everything." He said, "Well, then everything's going there because you bragged. Because you took the glory and you took the bows and you showed him your opulence rather than giving God glory as you were supposed to do." This is a direct fulfillment of that. The Bible says in verse 18, "The cauldrons, the shovels, the snuffers, the bowls, the spoons, and all the vessels of brass wherewith they ministered, they took away, and the basins and the fire pans and so forth." And you could read that whole thing. And what you're seeing is from verses 17 to 23 is they took away all their props. Now, as Charlie mentioned, that these two legislators went across the street and prayed at some church that was given to pageantry. Okay, that's what it all. That's all you can say about it. It's given to pageantry. Well, that's what these people were. If anybody was like the Jews, it was that Romanist kind of thing that we have in our day. We like the religion to be inside four walls over there, so we don't have to take it with us through our lives. Okay, it's pageantry. God is taking all their pageantry away and saying, "Now what are you going to do?" What I'm saying is, His wisdom is, God is pruning them down. He's getting each man to begin to ask the question, "Where do I stand and what do I believe?" Because really, that's what really matters. That's the sense of it. You know, you get to the book of Revelation and you see the churches in chapters 2 and chapter 3, and the word keeps coming back, "He that has an ear, let him hear." It's not "let the churches hear," because churches are done hearing. Churches don't want to hear anymore. People are saying phooey on the church. They're walking away from the church. And they think they're smart. But they're foolish because they're still the church. You got to be with the church. You need the church. Because the church is where you get your encouragement. It's where you get your batteries recharged. It's where you get your laughter that is unbridled because it's in God. You're laughing about good stuff. You're focused on the good stuff. Well, in the book of Revelation, it's down to the individual. He that has an ear, let him hear. Well, so it's going to be with these people. They're going to be put into their own they're going to be displaced. They're going to be taken to Babylon. Or they're going to know in the back rearview mirror of their lives that the temple's gone. All of the props that were in the temple, they're all gone. And when you read this, what you find is he hones in on the pillars at one point, and you look at verse 21. He says, "And concerning the pillars, the height of one was 18 cubits." Now, that's 3 times 18. What's that? 30, 40, 54 feet high? What we're talking about here is he's bringing us back to the fact that this was the Solomonic temple. This was the one that was huge and beautiful and opulent. And they broke them down. And God said that's okay because that's what has to happen. Because these people, my people, are depending on props. And basically he's ripping away their hypocrisy. So he's ripped away their pride, their security. He's brought forth the people and given them a dose of reality. He's taking away their hypocrisy because they had their hope in the fact that they were the people of God and they thought nothing could touch them. But indeed, because they had forsaken God, God was letting them be feeling what it is like to be fully forsaken. Verses 24 through 27, it says, "And the captain of the guard took Sariah the chief priest and Zephaniah the second priest and the 3 keepers of the door. He also took out of the city an eunuch which had charge of the men of war and 7 men of them that were near the king's person, which were found in the city, and the principal scribe of the host who mustered the people of the land, and 60 men of the people of the land that were found in the midst of the city." So Nebuchadnezzar, the captain of the guard, took them and brought them to the king of Babylon in Riblah. It sounds like a pretty interesting thing. What do you think is going to happen? Well, it's not good. Look at verse 27. "The king of Babylon smote them." God just took down their leaders. The last few leaders that were floating around the city, He took them. And you'd think maybe one king would extend an olive branch to another, or somehow there would be a little bit of, you know, deference given to these people because of their standing. It was not so. In fact, the way that they killed them was they impaled them. They were cast onto stakes. There was no dignity here. These leaders were gone. You know what that means? That means they couldn't say, well, our leaders did it. You know what happens in America when the leaders start messing up? Pretty soon we start saying fooey on the leaders and we walk the other way. But the thing we're left with is our own devices now. Now what a lot of people do is they turn in on themselves and they say, well, whatever will be, will be. But if it gets this radical and God has to reach this deep, these people have to ask themselves the real question. Do I believe God or don't I? And you know, a lot. It's real easy to say I believe God when I can go home, lock my doors, and go to bed at night and not worry. But when I'm discomfited and I'm out there and I got chains on my arms and I'm going to a new land and I have no idea. I don't know if you guys can ever remember a time where you just felt completely helpless. Perhaps the most closest feeling I can relate to was in the 90s, early, I think it was 1990, maybe 89, 90, when we were in the rescue movement. I spent 2 weeks in jail for saving babies. Back when it was the new thing and it was something that made sense and it rung true. Went out there and sat in front of an abortion clinic in Chester County, Pennsylvania. They were going to kill 30 babies that day. They were on the agenda. 30 babies were going to die. Spent 2 weeks in jail. They took everything away from me. And I was in solitary confinement. It was maximum security. We had two guys in a room. And you just felt completely without any resource. I couldn't help my family. The neat thing was people were coming from the church and giving my kids little teddy bears and giving my family food. But I needed a Bible, and somebody got me a Bible. It was the coolest thing. And I'm in a mix of a bunch of Catholics, and they kept asking me to preach. So I got to preach all week. Got to lead a man to Christ in prison. 2 weeks in prison. Kind of felt pretty uncomfortable. Pretty uprooted. And I feel like I'm in good company because Paul spent a lot of his time in jail too. So we can let that be as it may. But the Bible says these guys were losing everything, including their leaders. You know what that meant? When their leaders went south, that meant responsibility fell on their shoulders. And so they had to make some decisions as individual families. And you know what? This is exactly what God had to do. I'm putting this under the heading of the wisdom of God because these people were steeped in idolatry. They wanted to be idolaters because it was cool. It was the cool thing to do. And then they began to get big high opinions of themselves to the point where they thought they could take on Babylon, and this is what it got them. Verse 28, this is the people whom Nebuchadnezzar... I'm not going to read all these because this is just numbering the people that were taken away in this deportation. But I want you to let your eye fall down, if you would, to verse 31. Because it is here that another it came to pass. It says, and it came to pass in the 37th year of the captivity of Jehoiachin. Underline Jehoiachin. This is where he's first mentioned in this chapter. Jehoiachin is the one who reigned for 100 days. He came to the throne at age of 8. Some believe it was 18. Either one you want to take, doesn't matter. You can study that one out on your own time. But the point was, he only got a 100-day reign. He also went out and he fell to Babylon, as he was told. But one thing about him you need to know is the people looked at him as if he was the great hope. Okay. At one point in Jeremiah 22, he says, is he an idol to this people? In other words, everybody thought, this guy, this young man, he's our hope. He's from David's tribe. You know, he's from his lineage. He's going to be making it all right. So God said, you know what? You've placed him as an idol before you. I'm going to remove him from your hearts. So he took him away. Now, he's in jail. How long? 37 years. So if he's 37, you add 8. Well, you got 45 years old. He's coming up. And the Bible says, at age 45, the Bible says, in the 12th month, in the 25th day, that evil Merodach, king of Babylon, in the first year of his reign, lifted up the head of Jehoiachin, king of Judah, and brought him forth out of prison. Ezekiel times things in his prophecy by this man, Jehoiachin. And it keeps saying it, you know, in this 5th year, this 30th year, this 27th year. This is part of what we're seeing is here is Jeremiah doing it as well, naming the time, the 37th year of the captivity of Jehoiachin, because they had their eyes on him as if he was some sort of a plumb line of how things were going to go. Well, Evil-Merodach is now king. Now, what you have to know about Evil-Merodach is that when Daniel's king, which was Nebuchadnezzar, says, you know, I've made this great kingdom, it's wonderful, and I'm so great, and then he was smitten with insanity for 7 years, that Evil-Merodach came into the throne. He was the guy who was reigning for those 7 years. But he didn't anticipate Nebuchadnezzar getting his faculties back, and at the end of the 7 years, he takes Evil-Merodach and throws him into prison. Just decisively deals with him. So while he's in prison, he meets Jehoiachin. So, this last little section kind of brings to my mind the witness of God. Because what God is doing is He's bringing this man who did what he was supposed to do out of the dungeon. Yeah, he had to stay there 37 years, but he met Evil-Merodach in the midst of it. And maybe, we don't know all of the details, but we know the end of the story. It is a good one. But those 37 years, he may have been like Joseph. Suddenly he's put over this, he's put over that. But for some reason, Evil-Merodach liked this guy. He liked Jehoiachin. They spent time together. They did time together, if you will. And as they did time together, he liked this guy. So when Nebuchadnezzar dies, Evil-Merodach takes back the throne. And the Bible says he brings him up out of prison. And the Bible says not only does he bring him up, bring him forth out of prison, verse 32, he spake kindly to him, and he set his throne above the throne of the other kings that were with him in Babylon. There were other kings of other nations that were conquered. And he set his throne above all of theirs. And he changed his prison garments. And he did continually eat bread before the king, before him all the days of his life. And for his diet, there was a continual diet given him of the king of Babylon every day, a portion until the day of his death, all the days of his life. 37 years in prison. And what I want us to kind of glean from this is that if you're God's child and you've done the right thing, it may not look good on the outside where you're going to be or how it's going to turn out, but if you do the right thing, God will take care of you. Ultimately, this guy, as a witness in the closing of this book, he's the only king who went out and fell to the Babylonians and said, I submit myself. And you know, with that kind of a disposition, they didn't put him in the hard labor camps, but they did put him in prison. They kept him in captivity, and then they brought him out of that prison, the prison that even Evil-Merodach was put in. I think it's pretty cool to remember that. Because you know what? It may come down to it. You know, when they took those people in the days of the persecutions in that first or that second and third century after Jesus, when they were putting the Colosseums together and they were lighting up Christians, lighting up streets with Christians' bodies, and they were killing them, throwing them to the lions. It may not have looked good on the outside what was going on, but those people were singing songs in those Colosseums, and they turned Rome on its ear because their testimony shone so brightly. What we have to realize is the essence of who we are is about Jesus. It's not about our stuff. It's not about what we can accumulate. And what this man found is even though he spent 37 years in jail, he was the kind of guy somebody could like and raise up and call a friend and really bless when the time came. Well, here endeth the lesson, but I trust it's an encouragement to your heart. The wisdom of God, the wrath of God, and the witness of God, it's all there for us and for our encouragement. Go back and read it if you would, and hopefully it'll be renewed in your minds. All right.